Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
It's Chris-a-mania, brother.
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions. Woo!
This is the Chris Van Vliet Show.
Chris Van Vliet Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van Vliet!
Let's do this thing! Welcome back to another audio adventure on the Chris Van Vliet Show. This episode is brought to you by Bet Online and Deal Dash. And the last 10 days for Gallows and Anderson have been pretty crazy. From their non-compete with WWE expiring to talking all about it on their Talkin' Shop podcast, then appearing at Slammiversary, and now they're getting ready for their own pay-per-view on August 1st. That's Talkin' Shop-a-mania. We talk about all of that and so much more, including why they chose Impact Wrestling over the other options that they had. Also, why they re-signed with WWE and how they couldn't be happier with how everything worked out. And I couldn't be happier seeing a bunch of new reviews of the podcast. This is so great. I know some other shows charge money for shoutouts. No, not here. Mm-mm. I'm going to keep reading one out on every single episode of the show as my way of saying thank you for being on this audio adventure with me. R plus K for L, R plus K for life, writes, best podcast ever. One time when my house caught fire, Chris pulled up in his fire truck and put out the fire by himself. You might have never heard this story because of how humble Chris is, but I promise you, it happened. Seriously, though, this guy is one of the most professional podcasters I listen to. He's not afraid to ask the harder questions, but he always does it in a respectful manner with his approach. Well, thank you, R plus K for L. And no, that story never, that didn't actually happen. I think we should leave the firefighting to, you know, firefighters. But you know, I love you guys. So if your house was on fire and I happened to be in the vicinity, I would help out in any way that I could. but what a creative review. Jeez, that was great. I want to see more reviews like this. The more ridiculous, the better. In fact, I will look for the most ridiculous review and I'll try to read it next week on the show. Can you top the ridiculous story about me putting out a fire in my fire truck? So if you didn't catch Slammiversary, you missed out. I mean, I'm sure you've heard all about the surprise appearances from top to bottom. I'm sure you've seen the clips, but it was just such a solid, solid show. Capped off, of course, by the Good Brothers, Gallows and Anderson, who confirmed they've signed a 2-year deal with Impact Wrestling. They tell me, yes, while you will be seeing them in a lot of tag matches, they also have some singles plans too. They also get into why they were this close to signing with AEW last year and what happened with that. How AJ Styles played a very big factor in them re-signing with WWE. Why it didn't work out for them in WWE and who didn't believe in them. And then Gallows tells a great story about being pitched the Festus character by Vince McMahon. So buckle up! Woo! It's Gallows and Anderson. Here are Good Brothers joining me. Thank you so much for coming on, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us. I remember when you asked us about AEW back, I think, is it in Phoenix? At the Royal Rumble. And we probably gave you a smart-ass answer because we're like, why the fuck is he asking us about AEW? Like, we clearly want to leave. Yes, we clearly don't want to be here. We want to be there, but we talk about it then. And you forced something that we should have taken, right? How about that?
Well, look, hindsight's 20/20 now, and you guys are in a great position now, especially coming off a Slammiversary. That was a really, really exciting pay-per-view.
It was fun.
The buzz was real on that thing, and it just our countdown worked. Like you said, I think our podcast worked out great. All the surprises coming in after we were announced, and then the roster just stood up and showed out. And for the new eyes that came on it, I think that we hooked some viewers. So I think it's very cool.
So it was exciting, man. Yeah.
Which was Royal Rumble last year, you wanted to go to AEW. There was talk of this. You guys were close. You guys were very close. So why not AEW this time around?
Well, September of 2019, we had been talking to them. There was a very, very, very generous offer on the table. And then, you know, WWE does what WWE sometimes does, and they backed the bank truck up to the house and gave us a guarantee that was, I guess, too nice at the time for us to pass on, knowing that it wasn't the right decision. But now I can honestly say that everything does happen for a reason, because we're happy with how things turned out. But it sucked that we were that close to leaving, and we didn't bet on ourselves, and we stuck around and we took their money, and we saw what happened when the pandemic occurred. And, you know, I think that when certain people who we've already spoke on, we don't need to go back over it again, are trying to save, you know, five or six talent that maybe their money adds up to the two of us. We got put on a list we might not have originally been on, and hey, it is what it is. But now here we are. Slammiversary was a smashing success. The TV tapings were great. And we're headed to Talkin' Shop a Mania.
Well, I think Chris was asking why we didn't go to AEW now.
Oh, I was just giving a political answer.
I know. Well, yeah. Well, I don't know how I don't know if AEW is like throwing out any kind of offers right now in the middle of this global pandemic. And like, you know, we're friends with the Bucks, we're friends with Chris Jericho, we're friends with Kenny Omega now, and we've spoke with them a lot. But honestly, nothing ever came up, you know. And Scott D'Amore hit us up the day we got released, and he's been very, 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 very open with the fact that they wanted to bring us to Impact, and they had an offer for us within, you know, couple of days after of getting released. And I wasn't dying to go back and wrestle again, because WWE kind of sucked some shit away from my brain of even wanting to wrestle. And like he pushed it really hard, man, and he made it something that we wanted to do. And so Impact literally courted us so well that that's where we chose to go, and it turned out fun. Great.
Well, you guys talked on your podcast, Talkin' Shop, about how you never thought that your name would be on this list. I mean, you're coming off of WrestleMania, you guys were part of the Boneyard match. You thought that when there were going to be releases, there was no way, especially after you guys signed your deal, that you would be released.
No chance. I would have bet my house on it.
Good thing
I had my.
I don't know about my house. That's a big ass house, man.
At that time, I mean, well, okay, maybe not. Like when I saw the Vince video, right, of him saying we have to lay some people off, be some furloughs, and like my first thought was like, what the fuck's a furlough? And I looked it up real quick, and I googled furlough. I was like, furlough, lay him off for a little bit, and then come back. I was like, Well, there's no. I mean, no. Nah. And I went downstairs, and I was holding my baby, and I said, Ma or Tini, like my wife. I go, hey. Vince just put out this video about maybe laying some people off, but I'm not going to lie. Like, I feel confident. I feel confident. You know,
I remember that day, and I remember the video, and I was downstairs in the gym working out. And then I went and sat in the sauna, and we were texting with a few of our buddies in a separate text group. And they were going, oh man, I'm really worried. I saw the video. And we were like consoling them, like, you know, hey, wrestling's gonna, you know, this pandemic's gonna be over, there'll be plenty of places for you guys to go.
Well, here was a good one
thinking, we're gonna be on the fucking list. We're just telling really good brothers are gonna be fine, you know, there's a lot of options now, and then Hawkins, we get fucking called.
But Hawkins tells us Hawkins got fired, brother. He talked in the third person. You know, they got the Hawkins, and we were like, damn, you know, I'm sorry, Hawkins, but like, I mean, yeah. You know, you haven't been on TV in a while, I probably saw it coming, right? I mean, we're thinking that's what you're thinking, poor guy, like, fuck, but yeah. You're gonna be okay. Then I look down, I see Carano ringing my phone. I went, nah, hold on. What the fuck? Then I talked to him, right? And then he says, like, fuck it, business, man. It's all good. And Gallows sees the call. He answers it and goes, and what Carano say? I just got off the phone with your partner. And Gallows goes, for what?
For what?
He just stuck Carano's
call. Bad news. And I go, are you fucking kidding me? Us? And he goes, I'm sorry, buddy. And I went, what the fuck? Hey. And then I know how hard and shitty that job can be. So I wasn't even mad at him. I just wanted to hang up. You know what I mean? And then, you know, us being us, I knew that Carl did not see it coming, that Chad did not see it coming. So I went straight into Carney brother mode and called and got us booked in Peru and Spain because we thought the world would be open by now. We were just going to be doing a world tour.
He said, don't worry, brother. We're going to Peru and Spain for signings. I got this amount of money, and I'm also going to run a pay-per-view in my backyard. You can be involved in that or you're not. We're either one. I don't care. I'm running the pay-per-view. And I go, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Let this wrap around my head real quick, please. I just got canned.
Yeah.
Well, and then I got a text from Big E. I don't think I even said this ever. I saw a text from Big E, like, I remember I was up in my room, like, just going, what the fuck just happened? And then Big E wrote, hey, I'm so sorry, Chad. Like, you know, good luck, bro. I love you. And I was like, how does he know? You know? And then I realized that they put it on their website. I go, oh no, the whole world knows. So then I go outside and, like, I'm working out outside just trying to get my head right. I'm thinking the neighbors are looking at me like I'm a jobless asshole. Everyone thinks I'm a loser. Oh, this is terrible. And I was so pissed. Man, why the fuck would they put it on their website, man? Why do they got to make it like that? You know, and then I realized you're a celebrity. That's what happens. That's how I made it feel that way.
So the first move after the call, after finding out you're released, is picking the pieces up and trying to figure out where you can get booked immediately.
Oh yeah. I don't believe in a rearview mirror at all. And I've been through this before and I wasn't worried at all. I know that we have, you know, a big following. We have good buzz. People would want to see us. And then it was just like, well, how do we capitalize on this negative, turn it into a positive? And I went to work right away. I've been busier in the last 3 months than I've ever been in my life because of all the side business stuff with putting out the beer, with the podcast, with putting together this ridiculous pay-per-view that we're going to run. And then, you know, the overseas bookings and negotiating with Impact and getting – you know, them being very accommodating, putting all the stuff into that deal that we wanted so we'd be able to eventually return to New Japan when the world's open and, you know, lots of other stuff like that. And it's just, I felt like I had a real job for the first time ever because I'm on Zoom calls and I'm working the phone and I'm talking to these business guys and I'm pitching TV shows and all this shit that we've never really done before. But I mean, why the hell not? And it's all working out really well. So
yeah, because we thought the hustle side, we hustled when we were with the Bullet Club, selling Bullet Club shirts and taking our, you know, and we made as much money as we possibly could because we have families and that's all. Like, you got to just try to make as much as you can, right? Sure. And so, like, when you sign with WWE, you're just like, well, I mean, let's just collect the check, do what we can. And like 5 years of just waving that WWE flag and not having to go out and do these side hustles. But yeah, as soon as we got that release, man, Gallows was on it, bro. I mean,
I always missed the hustle. I had a secret wrestling promotion that I owned the whole time I was in WWE. I just lied about it.
Yeah, I don't always love the hustle. I like that nice little paycheck coming in and just relaxing and just like.
Yeah, but don't you like all that nice extra brother money that I send your way?
100%. I'm a brother, man. So I like to. It's been fun. It's just been, you know, trying to get back into the hustle mode again. And I mean, we're fully back in now, but.
So when you guys signed the 5-year deal, was it like, all right, like we're allowed WWE lifers. We're going to end up retiring there.
Well, yes. I mean, that's what we were told. You can never full on believe anything that you hear in this business. I don't think, really, really, really wanted to believe that and that to be true because we're like, well, this is 5 years. I mean, not 2 years, not 3 years, 5 years is a long-term commitment to anything. I mean,
which was still hard. It was a lot of money.
I never had a girlfriend for 5 years. Yeah. Let alone sign a wrestling contract
or a marriage. Hey, it was.
brother.
It was still hard to sign that 5-year deal, like because that's a 5 years. I'm thinking, like, man, five's a long time, and like we weren't. The WWE was great to us. Just like we weren't always. It's a really grind. That schedule, man. That schedule is brutal. And so we were thinking, like, man, should we just have done the 3 years? But then, like, let's just collect on this money.
Let's get all that money. And that to each other. We go, hey, we can do whatever we want when it's over, but that's lay down money. We've both been pretty smart. we'll be done if we want to be. I mean, we'll want to go out and do little brother signings and hang out with the boys and shit like that, but we won't have to do anything. We'll just chill. It'll be done with, you know, we can do whatever, make an appearance here and there. But
and they didn't say you'll never get fired. And they didn't say, I promise you, you'll never be fired. It's just like, you know, I just felt like in September of 2019, we had a lot of quote unquote leverage, man. And like we could have left WWE happily. And we could have made a lot of money outside, and we didn't bet on ourselves. That's why I'm so proud of the. I mean, we did. We're continuing to now, but I'm so happy for FTR to be able to have left on their own terms. Great.
They did their own way.
You did it right. I mean, I messaged them right away and said, "That's perfect, boys. That's the way to do it. You did it yourself. If you're not happy somewhere, you can't take the money, man. You just you know, it's hard to explain, but."
Well, you also had one of your best friends there, AJ Styles, which played a big part in this. If AJ worked for a different company, you think you'd even be interested in signing for 5 years?
And I don't want to put it all on AJ, but AJ was very, very, very influential in us staying. And that's not
really influential.
That's not a bad thing.
He didn't know either. And I think that's why he felt so bad about it. And we're grown men. It's nobody else's responsibility. But he just was like, I feel so bad. I convinced you guys to stay and told you everything was going to be all right. And then it wasn't, but we were not mad at him. We were never mad at him for 2 seconds. I mean, it's wrestling, it's entertainment. And I mean, the wheel keeps on turning. And the fun part for me, maybe not as much for Chad right out of the gate, was I was like, well, how do we make that much money and wrestle less and do all this fun outside shit? And I've gotten a big kick out of doing that. And I think we're actually going to do better. So, I mean, there's something to be said for all that too. And, you know, you have to kick it into gear and become a businessman and put it all out there. And I think that's exactly what we're doing. So, I mean, you know, that's just being a good friend, you know, that he felt bad because he's a real human being. Unlike, you know, some people we've come across in this business that we discussed in an earlier interview. So I appreciate him feeling that way, but we never placed any blame on him for it because he thought it was going to be as great as they were telling us it was going to be. So it is what it is. And he saw the amount of money and went, guys, I mean, that, you know, I agree, that's your lay down money. So
if he would have gone to AEW, to answer your question, we would have gone. We would have been out of there because his contract was up too in January, and we could have came in behind it.
Yeah.
How close do you think he was to going to AEW?
You know, he's on a different level than us, right? So he reached a different top guy WWE thing. There's a different level up there, and he's working with different kind of money than we're working with, and working with different kind of creative than we were working with. So I don't know how close he got to leaving. I don't know, because they always treated AJ Styles properly.
He's a few years older than us, and when, you know, in confidence, he told us what his offer was. It was like, I mean, no matter how good it is outside, that's going to be really hard to ever say no to anybody giving you that money. I mean, it just is.
I'd have signed that and quit after a year. I mean,
same.
Just never did it.
Gallows, after your first run in WWE, did you ever think that you'd be back there?
No. No, I always said that when we were in Japan, that I'd never go back. Wouldn't be welcomed back and wouldn't want to go. So
really?
When this was all coming up at the end of 15, we sat in a room in Japan and we took a vote, and Chad and AJ voted yes, and I voted no. And they were like, what? And I was like, no, I know how it is. You don't want to do that. Yada, yada, yada. But it was for different reasons than what it ended up being. It was, you know, I didn't like the locker room, but I was a kid in my 20s when I was there the first time. And I went back, and the talent were all great. We love and miss a lot of those boys and girls. But it was a different atmosphere, you know, when we got back. But the problem wasn't any of that stuff. It was just the creative hurdles of the start and stop all the time, and the little push, and then the little this and this and this. And there was never any sustained momentum for us. It was kind of what ended up being the problem. But to answer the question, no, I didn't think I'd ever be back.
I just look at the Festus character and can't believe that that's you.
Yeah.
Wait, what were the original discussions like around that?
I mean, it literally.
Well, tell them your Vince meeting.
Yeah, I was 23 years old, and basically they told me to kind of get out of shape, and this was the character that they had for me. Originally, we were going to be hillbillies, which I didn't. I was like, I mean, how far is there, is this like hillbilly thing going to be able to go? Because originally Gordy was teaming with Henry Godwin. So anyway, then I became the hillbilly. We cut this hillbilly promo that we came up with, and they're like, okay, you guys are gonna be the hillbillies. I'm like, all right, that's whatever. And then we're getting ready to debut. We're in the ring saying we're going to do this, this, and this. And it's like 20 minutes before doors. And they go, Vince McMahon wants you guys in his office. Are we getting fired already? So we go in the office, and Vince is literally like, hey, big man, can you do this? And I'm literally trying to make this face back at him. Not like that, like this. And we do the Festus face to each other for 10 fucking minutes. And finally, he explains to me that he wants me to portray this catatonic character, and the bell triggers him, and he goes wild and kicks everyone's ass. And then he hears the bell again, and he's back to being catatonic, so to speak. So, you know, it's when you grow up thinking you're going to be like a long-haired wrestler with a beautiful robe and this cool guy, and you become Festus. It's not exactly ideal, but to be that young and to be on television, you know, that was a character. Like, I was talking to Hawkins about it. Like, everyone, it was a good little mid-card act. Everybody, it was so simplistic that everybody knew what it was. The kids knew when the bell rang, he goes nuts. When the bell rang, he goes nuts, whatever. And it always got a good reaction. It just, there was never going to be longevity to it. But I mean, bought me my first house. So I, you know, it was what it was.
It could have been longevity to it. It's all up to how long they want to make it longevity.
Well,
how long,
yeah, how long they want there to was make no it. Coming out of Festus and becoming something else, yeah, in a long storyline.
We needed Festus versus Eugene. That's what we needed.
Yeah, dude, Eugene was great too.
You know what's funny? We can't find Festus or Eugene in the history books anymore because they're just not applicable.
That's so funny that character not only wouldn't work in 2020, it's not even acknowledged in 2020.
It's gone. Acknowledged. Yeah. So,
wow. So with your current setup with Impact, you're still able to do stuff for New Japan?
Yeah.
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 That's, yep. It all, yeah. It's actually written into our contract that, you know, yep, and Impact's even going to work around, like, cause the, you know, everything for them basically is TV tapings, right? So we're going to be able to work around dates, and New Japan has told us what dates that they want us to come and this and that. And so it's all, that's all exciting too. Once that, you know, they're starting to open up doing live shows again, right?
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
it's going to be when the borders are open again, because I think if we went now, we'd have to go 2 weeks before a show and like be quarantined. And I don't want to be just chilling at the hotel for,
but that might be worth it to wrestle in front of a crowd though.
Don't get me wrong. Now it'd be fun to be in Japan for 2 weeks, to be honest, but like, kayfabe that from the wife, it should be fucking hot. just sitting in a room for 2 weeks.
Do we know how close they are to having shows with fans again?
They're having shows with fans right now in Osaka. They had the different cities have different
parameters.
Yeah. So like Osaka is like having like 25% people are in there, and they all have to wear their masks. But they had I think when Evil became champion recently over Naito, there was a crowd, and so it's gonna get, they're better than the Americans in handling this thing. So it's going to be, they're gonna be better than Americans in a lot of things, but they're going to handle this. They handle this thing properly, and they're not going to let people just come flying into the country without, you know, some kind of measurements.
Do you think about what your debut would have looked like if this was a world where there were fans at shows right now?
Absolutely, man. That was the only regret we had about the whole Slammiversary deal and like that whole show, because like that Motor City Machine Guns, that was smartly booked right out of the gate. You're going to bring those guys out there and have this big surprise. Like, they would have got a hell of a reaction. I think we would have got a hell of a reaction, a lot of stuff on that show. But nobody got to hear that. So I
guess it's kind of it's because if there was no pandemic, I don't feel like we would have gotten canned, because I had first class flights all over the whole world, going to South Africa, going to Australia, going to Japan, all throughout this whole summer and even into the fall. But that's what, if you see me talking to Gallows when we debuted, what I'm saying to you, like, the music is playing, you can't hear what we're talking to each other. I go, man, imagine if there's a crowd here right now with the pop we would have gotten. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Because we proved to ourselves that we're a legitimate draw, so that's all we needed.
Well, of course. Yeah. By the way, those first class seats, especially on the overseas flights where you get to lay flat.
Oh yeah,
that was better than the pod.
That was absolute essential in the next deal, in the deal that we signed. So, and we got it.
You got it, and at some point you'll be flying to Japan. Hopefully, in your first class pod.
in the first Rocky knows that. He's our friend. He's our talent relations. And we haven't discussed that yet, but he knows that's coming.
Yep. He knows we're going to pick on him about it.
Oh, yeah.
Are you guys surprised by how much the podcast has taken off? Talkin' Shop is not only one of the top wrestling pods in the world, one of the top podcasts in the world as of right now.
We sit on here and talk with you, right? And like, we enjoy just bullshitting and talking and like having beers and just relaxing. That's what we like to do in the hotel room after a show anyway. And that's what Talking Shop was built on, was, you know, me, Gallows, Rocky, the Young Bucks. We would all sit in the room and we'd get beers, and then the Young Bucks would just watch us get drunk, and then we would just talk, and we would tell everybody we'd tell each other how great we are all the time. And so it's like, we got to make this a podcast. Like, I'm the best wrestler in the world. Young Bucks, you guys are the best tag team in the world. Oh, hell yeah, we are. We know we are. Gallows is the best big man. He's the funniest. Look at him. And Rocky's a great little cruiserweight, man. Look how good he is. And we're just sitting, we just put each other over the whole fucking time. And it was like, we got to turn this into a podcast. And it turns
that's why
into
it's, fun. It's called Talking Shop.
Yeah, it's
really what we're doing. Hey, you guys want to get beers and go to the room and talk shop? Fuck yeah, I want to go to the room and talk shop. Of course,
it's love just, that. Yeah.
It's basically like hanging out with us because we have no format. Ever. So that's why we had to bring in Ryan Satin to actually kind of do like our shoot interview, if you will, because if it was just us, we would never would have covered any of that. We would have just been talking shit and making jokes back and forth and getting drunk. So we had to have some semblance
and
of
telling each other and telling each other how cool we are.
Man, you look cool out there, man.
Yeah. Well, I one flight from England to New York, we had me and Gallo sat right next to each other, and we were just sipping drinks the whole entire flight. I mean, the whole 9 hours, and the whole time we're just going, "Ah, man, look how cool you look with your beard." And I go, "Man, look at people looking at us, man. We look so cool." The whole 9 hours.
You got four sons. What a badass motherfucker you are.
It's good to know, man. I'm cool as shit. Then we got to New York, and we're like, "Oh."
What's the go-to drink when you get on a plane?
Oh, it depends, I guess. I think you can always go with a nice little bit of the blood. Go with some nice red wine, sip on that, nice even keel. Maybe a cold beer every now and then. But
the home drink, because I have to be
right in that coffee mug there.
Yeah, I got my little Jim Rome coffee mug too. There we go. Right, there we go. Sipping on coffee to keep myself awake, baby, because I didn't sleep well. I was laying in bed last night. My 6-year-old gets on my right side. My 8-year-old gets on my left side, and I'm trying to hook up with mommy the whole time, and then nothing. These kids keep messing up my whole entire night. Little shits.
Maybe tonight.
Maybe tonight. I don't think she's dying for it.
I think at home, though, it's a high boot cocktail. What a high boot cocktail is, a lot of vodka, diet anything, squeeze of citrus. That's the way to do it. We call that the high boot cocktail on the road that is deemed after the big LG because you know, it's just what we like to do. Low sugar, low carbs, lots of alcohol.
Yeah.
I got to try this Friday night here while we're recording.
Yeah, high boot cocktail it up, good brother.
Yeah. I'm sure that here in Los Angeles, that'll cost about $27.
Oh, you can make it at home. Just get some Tito's and just remember, a lot of vodka, diet anything, little squeeze of citrus.
What part of L.A. are you in?
I'm in Studio City.
Oh nice.
Yep, closer. I think Rocky's in oh man, where's he at? Begins with a P.
Pasadena.
Yep.
There you go. And Ryan Satin's actually like one city away here.
You guys could have a good little brother party.
You sure could. Sure.
Yeah. Just sit 6 feet away and wear a mask, right?
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to take a quick time out to thank our sponsors who make episodes like this possible. Have you heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price that you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor. They even have cars on DealDash. So here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up by 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. So that means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Just go to DealDash.com and use the promo code CVVSHOW or go to DealDash.fm
DEAL.FM/CVVshow. That's DEALDASH.FM/CVVshow. Also got to thank our sponsor, Bet Online. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, Bet Online. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on. They're all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, Bet Online sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they all had to say on what it's like to be playing without fans in a series that they are calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and all your up-to-date sports news. Remember to use that promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Gallows, you're going by Doc Gallows.
Yeah, we copyrighted
by Carl Anderson.
Yeah. We trademarked a bunch of stuff with Michael Dawkins, our world famous wrestling trademark lawyer, because we knew we started doing that back in September because we knew when we left, we wanted to have our own shit. So I own the Big LG. I own Doc Gallows. We own Talking Shop. We own Good Brothers. He owns Machine Gun, Carl Anderson. There's a laundry list of them and a lot of lawyer bills, but it was worth it. So
a lot of lawyer bills. My wife was talking about it today. Hold on a second. You know, I think it's cool that, like, if you look back on when we debuted, I think we were the first couple of guys along with AJ that were able to, you know, keep our names. Like, yeah. I remember Seth Rollins bringing it up to me. You guys got to keep, you know, he might not remember this, but he's like, you guys got to keep your names. Now, what the fuck, you know, because we have this. I mean, Carl Anderson, I built this thing for 8 years in Japan and a couple, 6 years before that in Los Angeles and on the independent scene. And so now we have this, I mean, it's so helpful to not have to leave WWE and then change my name to Chad or something. Like, this is so people know who Carl Anderson is. And then I can throw the machine gun on top of that and give myself a leave. It's just, I'm just happy that we have that, you know?
Absolutely.
But Luke, you didn't want to go by Luke Gallows?
Luke was a name that they had given to me, or I forget how, but somehow whenever I was doing the deal with Punk, the Luke thing came up. And then whenever I was out of WWE after that, it was always Doc, and I always called myself the Big LG. So I just went ahead and bought both of them, and now they're mine. So no one can fucking take it.
You know, you guys talk about your debut, and there was, you know, you guys made a mark when you debuted in WWE, and then stuff fell off like relatively quickly.
Yeah.
From your perspective, what was it that caused things to fall off?
We just were never booked consistently, man. We would get that, like, those WWE terms, like the shot in the arm or the fresh coat of paint. Well, when we were sitting here going, guys, we wouldn't keep needing these fresh coats of paint and shots in the arm if we could just have some consistent fucking booking. Like, you win the titles, and then the next week you lose in 2 minutes in a singles match, or you win a trophy, and then the next week you're off TV, and the week after that you lose to so-and-so. And it's just not that we cared about always winning, but we would have liked to have had some, if we would have had some momentum with the booking, we could have kept the momentum with the little things that we were able to, you know, kind of get over on our own, like the Nerds thing, the Hot Asian Wife thing. These are all things that we just said and inserted. Nobody wrote them for us because we were like, they're not giving us anything. We have to do something so that people have a reason to react, because we're not the cool, badass G&A Bullet Club guys anymore. We're kind of a watered down WWE version that they're not all the way committed to. So it was, I don't know. I guess that's from my perspective.
Just, I mean, bad booking. That's it.
That's it.
That's it, brother. I mean, we got a couple, we got things over that, you know, probably weren't supposed to be over. I mean, there was some, you know, I remember like Ed Koski was head writing, head writing, like, you know, what do I got to say, really? I mean, I don't want to bury him, but what the fuck does anybody know? Does he know? You know, nothing. Anyway,
remember that? Remember the time in catering when we go, hey, Ed, do you have a minute? And he goes, no, not really. And we went,
yeah. End of the day, who the fuck is Ed Koski? You
know? Really?
Do you think that Vince was not familiar with your work in New Japan?
100% not.
Yeah. Probably not. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just, you got to have people in there. You got to have people in the meetings, you know, that have your back, and you got to have people in the meetings pushing for you. And I just think that we didn't have enough of that. You know, but we kept sneaking in certain places, and we kept getting sprinkled in throughout the 4 years. So it ended up being okay.
We heard that from a friend of ours in the meeting who wasn't a creative guy. He goes, it's not that anyone's in there burying you guys, but no one's going to bat for you. You don't have any Gallows and Anderson guys, and a lot of the people who are getting consistent stuff and consistent, you know, decent to good booking, they have somebody raising their hand and going, well, how about so-and-so? And we never had that, I don't think. So
yeah, or like, you know, somebody might pitch us for a couple of years, and then you might say something like, nah, let's not use them there, like, for example. And then, you know, next thing you know, you just get thrown off. It's just such a long creative process and so much stuff that goes into this thing. And we just weren't their guys, and it is what it is.
It's fine. Well,
was there like a particular match or pay-per-view where you're like, if only they had booked us this way, if only we had gone over on this tag team, things would have been way different for us?
There's a couple of different things, but I remember once, like, they said that we needed a shot in the arm, right? And it was the Dudley Boys last show. Like,
and that was a time, I want to say this, that was a time someone did say that for us. I remember Fit was the one who got that for us because he knew us and thought we were good. And he said, these guys need something. Now go ahead. I went ahead and cut you
out. Yeah, but it was like their, not their retirement, but it was like their last show in the WWE. They were saying goodbye, maybe, and then we came in from behind and we beat the shit out of them. Like, we gave Bubba the magic killer on the floor, and we put Devon to a table, and we stood tall over the Dudley Boys. And then, you know, we get a promo next week, and we're not even, and we sadly have to clear things a lot of times, and they didn't even want us to say.
We did that.
We finished off. Like, yeah, we killed the Dudleys. We retired the Dudleys. They didn't even want us to say that. Yeah,
so weird. And another one was the old day thing. Like, we heard through the grapevine, like, we got heat for how bad that segment was. Well, of course it was a bad segment. You took three or four extras who've never been on national television. They're nervous as shit to walk out on Monday Night Raw, and you give them three pages of lines. They're not actors. They're barely wrestlers. No offense.
We got back to remember, and we got back to Gorilla, and like Triple H even said that, and he goes, we need better writers. I'm thinking, no shit. But it's just like everyone knows that. But that was just a couple different segments. But like, you can't complain about those little things. It's just, you got to be with one of their guys. And I guess we just weren't their guys. And I don't mean we got over somewhere and came in. It's just, and it's not, you don't have to be chosen or anything like that. It's just, we just weren't who they wanted to be on top, you know, or be involved all the time.
Well, now you have the opportunity to be whatever you want in Impact Wrestling. I feel like they're giving you as much creative control as you want.
Yeah. And that's going to be a lot of
nice,
fun.
It's a nice feeling. It's nice that when they give you a promo that they didn't stick lines in our faces, they let us just be us. And that's what we've wanted the whole time. So it's good.
Scott D'Amore knows us too. Like, you know, he was in Tokyo when I had some big main event matches, and like, you know, he's watched me and Gallows have big tag matches in front of, you know, a lot of people at the Tokyo Dome. Like,
yeah.
So he knows what we got. He knows what we can do, and he knows what the can do. He knows now that we're a proven legitimate draw with the way the anniversary was all over the place. So we're already looking towards the next contract for the Rays already. So
yeah, we already asked for the Rays.
About a lot. Yeah, we want to stay with it. Now we're all in.
Yeah,
we want Impact to go into the future for as long as possible. We want to work for the next 25 years with Impact. So there you go.
Wow, 25 more years with Impact.
25 more years. I asked Triple H for Mark Carano and Triple H for lifetime contract, 75 grand a year, lifetime. Gallows goes, geez, Mickey, up it a little bit. I said, I don't give a shit, man. I'm going to live till I'm 90. That's a multi-million-dollar contract, brother. Just keep some money coming.
That was one of his least funny jokes that he ever said, but he would say that to their faces all the time. And I'm going, what? I don't see why this. Carano
said no, but Triple H said yeah, so we need to talk. But then see what happened.
What do you think is different about Impact this time around? There just seems to be more of a buzz from an outsider's point of view, but what's different for you guys? You know, you're there.
Well, the buzz is us, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the buzz is real. The buzz happened, and now it's all about carrying on the momentum. The creative freedom is great. I think they have a roster that a lot of people have slept on. There's some great talent in there, and I think that it's going to elevate them. I saw a lot of people step up because anytime new people come in, the existing guard goes, hey, what the fuck? Let's step it up. And that does nothing but create healthy competition, which I think is just going to continue to make the show better and better. And, I mean, we're already looking forward to Bound for Glory in October because we want to come out and have our first big classic on Bound for Glory. We want all those eyes again on Bound for Glory, and we want to tear shit the fuck up, and we're going to. It's going to be great.
With the Motor City Machine Guns?
Hey, that'd be...
Please. That'd be Scott, the management.
Yeah. The management, man. They who's in charge? They're business oriented guys. Like, you know, Ed Norhelm is a great business guy. He knows what he's doing. Scott DeMore knows the wrestling business inside and out. Don Call is head of the creative team. He's like, right. These guys have been in business for a long time. Talent inside the locker room, you know, I didn't even know a lot of them. Because when you're in that WWE bubble, you don't watch anything outside of it. Unless you just, you know, especially when you have a family, you don't give a shit at all to watch anything.
Right.
And so I was just getting familiar with some of these guys. And, man, there's some good stuff there. And, like, just give it a chance. Like, it was surprising to me, you know.
Don't.
And then now you got us. Hey, what did I say? What when Scott DeMore said, you know, after watching the North and the Motor City Machine Guns, that like, uh-oh, you guys are down the totem pole now because they just had a five-star match. And I said, Scott, you didn't bring us in for five-star matches. You came in here just for people to look at us, brother.
That's it.
Yeah. We're just the draw, brother.
That's it.
And maybe like 3.5-star matches. That's the plan?
Yeah, you know.
Maybe two.
Yeah. They don't need to be too long.
Yeah. Keep it under 8 minutes, pal.
Yeah. Please.
I want to ask you guys about the Boneyard match, and then we'll talk about the Boner Yard match after.
Oh, that's going to be a classic instant.
Most importantly, yeah.
How long did the Boneyard match take to film?
Well, we started when it got dark, and we were done at about 5:30 in the morning, so it took the entire night. Yeah.
And was it like it was scripted out, like move for move? Word for word?
No, not move for move, I don't think, but there were spots in it and stuff like that. Undertaker cut the hell out of his arm very early on and just like would wrap it up in between takes and keep going. But there was a lot of it took all night. But I, you know, that being said, I get that because the masterpiece that we put together, we had 2 14-hour days in shooting that as well. So it just, especially when you're going cinematic like that and you're cutting for certain things and, you know, we probably had to cut because shit wasn't going right on our pay-per-view, but they had to cut for lighting and sound and every other thing that they do when they produce these WWE productions and stuff. But I mean, it took all night.
I mean, really, Taker sliced his arm on that limo whenever he punched it, or that the hearse.
Yeah.
But like he could see like it was nasty, bro. And he didn't sell it, man. I'd give it to him. And they kept cleaning. They would clean it up between each take and then just fix it. And that was it.
Keep going.
Wow. Keep going. He probably had to have surgery or something. I think it was
sure. Yeah, yeah. It was like there was like shit sticking out of his arm. I'm not a doctor, but it wasn't a normal.
If that happened to me, Boneyard over. give me to the ER, brother.
His tattoos are gonna look pretty gnarly after that.
I think so. Yeah. They're definitely gonna have to. Yeah. I don't know.
Taker was great too. You know, putting that thing. That was the first I got a chance to. Well, we worked with him a couple times with like leading up to that match, but. I mean, he was amazing putting that thing together with, and like him and AJ, obviously AJ is probably the best ever. And so watching him and AJ just like, talk these things out and just watching Taker work. And I think he even, you know, if maybe he likes it or not, but no matter what, I know he had to respect us after that a little bit because he knows we're not two dumbasses. Like we were there for him and took care of him. And I know a couple of the minions or druids or whatever knocked him over because there was a couple of those guys that were under the druid hoods couldn't work with the fuck and he was pissed too. So I was like, I think he was happy to get Gallows and Anderson touching him and whacking, you know.
I think some of those druids need to go back to summer school, he said.
That's what it was, yeah. Hey, he said it's a rap on the druid. Somebody said rap on the druids. He goes, they need to go back to summer school.
If it wasn't for the Boneyard match, do you think you'd do you think Talking Shop of Mania would look as good as I'm assuming that it looks?
I will say this. If there was no Boneyard match, there would be no Boner Yard match.
If there's no Boner Yard match, there's absolutely no Talking Shop of Mania because the rest of that stuff sucks. Yeah,
pretty bad. listen, when you guys turn, when you tune in August 1st, 2020, 9 p.m. Eastern, remember, you're not watching this for a work rate professional wrestling pay-per-view. You're watching a parody. You're watching something that when the world is in a very dark place in a lot of ways, we're in the middle of a pandemic, there's social unrest everywhere. We love to entertain. We wanted to do something to make you guys happy, to make you smile, to make you laugh. It's all done with a wink. It's not meant to piss anybody off, even though it will. So just enjoy that. Drink a couple beers, get your friends together, whatever it is that you do, sit back, relax. You can watch it on American, Canadian pay-per-view. If you watch on iPay-per-view worldwide, it's available via the Fight app. It's only $14.99, so you can't be that pissed off if you do hate it. You've wasted $14.99 on something at some time or another. Yeah. So just know that it was all done in jest. We have a lot of what we think are hilarious cameo appearances that we put in there. And the Boner Yard match is epic. I don't know for what reason, but I know that it's epic.
Yeah, it's like watching Hot Shots, right? Or Hot Shots Part 2.
Okay. One of our favorite movies, Hot Shots, yes.
That's a good way to go into this. Like, just understand that we're fucking just having fun. And also understand that we had just gotten fired, so our brains are a little bit fried. Trying to figure out what the fuck are we going to do. What the fun.
It's, you know, you say,
I mean, fired. I mean, just fired, embarrassed. My neighbors read it all over the news, Bleacher Report. I mean, you're fucking embarrassing me. Fuck.
You'll get over it. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
You're doing lunches outside, and people are going, how's he going to pay for his children to go to school? How's he going to pay for that big fucking house? He can't anymore. That's what they're saying. I know that's what they're saying.
That's why I don't have neighbors, because I can't see my neighbors. They can say whatever the fuck they want. I'm just up here doing this.
You know, they're telling their kids, you know, he doesn't have a job.
We can't go over there and bring the, we need to bring them food because they can't eat.
Look at the jobless asshole. Let's take him a cake.
There's the jobless asshole doing his lunges. Oh,
boy. Look at him cutting his own grass now.
Why is he lunging anyway? He should be out looking for work.
Hope he enjoys that basketball court before they, or that, yeah, that's a little basketball goal before they come take it away from him. Hope he enjoys that truck he's driving around before they repo it, or what is it called?
Yeah.
Every time I wave to somebody in the neighborhood, they're like, oh, poor guy. Oh, well.
But if it, you know, like you said, everything happens for a reason. If it wasn't for the pandemic, we wouldn't have Talking Chopomania. We wouldn't have a Boner Yard match.
Well, we have
one. Have this interview.
We wouldn't have this interview. That would definitely not happen because
certainly not as candidly.
And certainly not as long either.
That's true. Yeah.
But we didn't have had it because we didn't do anything when we were there. It's like, especially not on our own. Ever.
No.
Except for the Jim Rome show, which they didn't want us to do the Jim Rome show because it's actually a good show and actually get them out a little bit. They wanted to keep us off of that.
Yeah,
we did it anyway, though. We were always running a little bit on edge anyway with how we acted there.
You guys weren't sent off to do the press days, the media days, like so many people are at like 3 a.m, 4 a.m?
Of course we had to do those. Of course, because they knew that we would do them and not bitch about it and do it. And then we start thinking, are we going to get a little run? Are we going to get a little something for this? Because we're doing these stupid Monday morning 6 a.m. calls, you know?
Excellent, Stone Cold. Wow.
Gallows Dinner.
So obviously the locker room's different. The vibe is different in Impact Wrestling, New Japan, obviously Indies. At what point in WWE did you go, this is different?
Day one, because the Gallows had told me about it. And just once I saw how big this thing is, man, and this creative process and like these writers telling us day one what they wanted to do or something. And then I'd see none of that ever happen. And then I realized that it's not because he didn't want it to, but because this writer has to say it to this writer, then this writer has to say it to the head writer, then that writer has to say it to Ed Koski, then Ed Koski has to say it to the whole team, then that whole team has to say it to Vince, and the right person has to say it to Vince for it to pass to Vince. Fuck. As confusing as it sounded is how that is.
Yeah,
I knew it was different. Nothing else. The New Japan is just like you do it. WWE is a different ball game, man. You have to go through a lot of different avenues.
Well, Impact Wrestling feel Impact. I've been backstage at Impact Wrestling a few times, and it feels like Scott D'Amore is, you know, completely accessible. He's right there.
Yep.
Yeah. Completely. 100%. Yeah, and that's going to be the good thing, because like when we need something or want something, like we just go to him and we just, you know, we bring it up, and then he'll say it's good or it's bad, and like that's all we care about, is just being able to hear our ideas out, you know.
Are there any tag teams that you guys haven't worked with that you still want to work with?
The North and the Motor City Machine
Gun, for sure.
They're literally right there. You know, and we'd like to. We had a match with FDR in Japan when we were with the WWE, and it was a chance for both of us to actually work the way we like to work. And we had a fucking banger, and it was awesome. And so I'd like to work them again outside of that.
Outside of WWE, absolutely, and, yeah. Tear it up,
and preferably in Japan.
And that would be honest. Do you think most of the matches that we'll be seeing from you guys in Impact will be you guys together?
No, I think we'll do some tag stuff.
We're both looking to always be together, but do some singles stuff too. I think that there's some layers that people haven't seen of Carl for sure from Japan. There's definitely some layers to me they haven't seen probably at all. So we're both really looking forward to that, to doing the tag stuff, but also doing our single stuff as well, and probably forming a kick-ass faction at some point too.
For sure, we're faction guys.
We're definitely faction guys.
We have to have guys around us, and it's just fun.
Take some bumps for us, laugh at our jokes, get our beers, whatever.
Yeah. Fuck.
It sounds like the perfect thing. Now, whose idea was Countdown to Fucktown?
I started putting it on social media, and then Chad and Rock are like, let's make it a thing. Let's do a real countdown. And we're like, oh, shit, what do we have here? And then we decided, you know, we'll do our boozing with the boys, which you can always join on patreon.com/talkandshop. As a lead in, and then at midnight, when the official moment hits that the no compete clause is up, the severance is done, then we roll right into that podcast that started at midnight with Ryan Satin, where we kind of told our whole story. But it worked. The buzz really worked out great. The Slammiversary announcement was awesome. And then the momentum carried into the pay-per-view the next day and into the tapings and the TV that aired on Tuesday, I think. So it was pretty cool.
We were like, you know, fuck, we were like, I'm glad that like we signed with Impact, because if we just, our first thing was like, what are we going to announce? We didn't know. And then we were like, well, let's announce that Talking Shop of Mania. I guess we'll announce Talking Shop of Mania. And people would be like, oh, come on, man. Talking Shop of Mania is awesome. It's going to be awesome. But I think I'm happy that Impact came in and we were able to do that, because I think they actually moved the dates around too to make it work right on that exact day.
Yep. Yeah, that's interesting.
That was a fun day, man. We watched our Patreon numbers like fly up for like, you know, this for this countdown. Because we said, let's just drink for these 2 hours and midnight hits, guys. Like, let's go to our YouTube and you can watch that. But let's just, and then our Patreon numbers flew up. Then our YouTube subscribers went up for us. We had none. We had like,
yeah, we didn't think about starting the YouTube before that, which was probably a bad idea, but
so whatever, right? We were hoping for maybe 2,000 subscribers on YouTube for that interview. We ended up getting like almost 8 or 9 for the interview. So,
well, whoever's watching right now can subscribe to you guys on YouTube. I'll drop the link down below so they can do that.
Yeah, perfect. We're not even sure. Yeah, Rock has everything. Rocky's our guy.
So, yeah. if this was the countdown to Fucktown, does that mean we are now residing in Fucktown?
We are in Fucktown.
Fucktown. But this now is Countdown to Fucktown 2, because August the 1st, so that we just went ahead and threw it in there. This week, we're going nuts, and this is Countdown to Fucktown 2. So we're going to do Boozing with the Boys on Talking Shop, our Patreon/Talking Shop at 8 p.m. From 8 p.m. to 8:50, we're just going to get all ourselves inebriated as we possibly can safely. So that when we watch Talking Shop of Mania, we have to have a head change, because you can't go into that sober unless you're a sober brother that gets it. But get your head where you want it to be so that you can enjoy this with us all.
If you want to do Countdown to Fucktown 2 with me live and you're in the Southeast, come to the Southern Brewing Company in Athens, Georgia, where I will be hosting the countdown.
You're gonna be hammered, brother.
And then we're going to do a live watch along of Talking Shop of Mania. And what that means is you can either laugh with me, or when it's over and you hate it, you can laugh at me. But either way, you'll be able to do it right to my face. So join us, Athens, Georgia, Southern Brewing Co., starting Saturday night, August the 1st at 8 p.m. If you're watching from home live on pay-per-view or iPay-per-view via the Fight app. The show starts at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And if you're fans with us, if you're fans of us at all, just buy it and then watch a boxing fight or something. Give it. But just if you can't watch it, just buy it and then go watch ESPN if you don't feel like watching it. And if you're going to watch it with Gallows Live, buy it before you go to watch it with Gallows Live. Please.
Yes.
Give us the buys, baby.
We need the buys.
$14.99.
You know how crazy this is? Like, if you guys were breaking into the wrestling business, you know, when you started your careers and you said, one day you guys are going to have your own pay-per-view. One day you guys are going to be drinking beers and people are going to be listening to this, or drinking drinks and people are going to be listening to this. One day people are going to be paying on this thing called Patreon. It's just crazy to think about.
I can't believe that Gallows didn't invent Patreon back in Japan. We would be fucking sitting nice, wouldn't we? We never would have had to go to New York.
I should have thought of Patreon so much. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm pissed about that, actually.
I just can't believe it wasn't. If we'd had it back then, dude, we would have, man, we would have been just loving it in the Bullet Club.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, I want to be respectful of your time because I know you guys have a very important business call here coming up. So,
yeah, Gallows,
thank you for making this happen. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. My son's going to really love that I did this interview. He watches all your YouTube stuff.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
You're one of the few we like. Interviews are a lot for me.
Thank you. Look, it should just be hanging out, not unlike your podcast. Be having a conversation.
Let's do it. Can you come on Talking Shop sometime? You can crack open a Canadian beer, a little Molson Ice.
Molson Ice. Wow.
Oh, baby. I love a good Molson Ice.
That is a dangerous beer. But yes. It's funny. One of the cheapest beers at the beer store, because in Ontario, you can only buy beer at the beer store.
Beer store, yeah.
And Molson Ice were cheaper, but had more alcohol. Yeah. So when my friends and I really wanted to get messed up, we'd buy Molson Ice, and then we'd say, we're getting ice tonight. Then you get ice. Sign me up. I'll come on Talking Shop and get hammered.
Let's do it, please.
Perfect. I love it. Love it.
You let me know whenever.
I will. I promise. Thanks for having us, good brother.
Thank you. Talking Chopamania, August 1st.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for everybody for buying Slammiversary and making us look the draws that we know we are.
Couple of good brothers. Right there. What a chat. And, you know, if you were to make a list of the wrestlers that you'd want to have a beer with, I feel like Gallows and Anderson would be right at the top of that list. How cool are they? Take a screenshot. Tag us. I am at Chris Van Vliet. Gallows is at @the_BigLG. And Anderson is at MachineGunKA. So I guess we're going to be seeing them in Impact Wrestling for the next 25 years. I mean, that's what Anderson said, right? Which is funny because Impact isn't even 25 years old. But, you know, it's just so great to see how happy they are, how excited they are for the freedom that they have. And it's just awesome. Awesome also knowing that Gallo's son watches my interviews. So shout out to Gallo's son for being excited for this interview and watching the videos on YouTube. Thank you. P.T. Barnum said, no one ever made a difference by being like everyone else. Next up on the show, we got another one of the surprises from Slammiversary. Ooh, yeah. Eric Young will be with us on Thursday. Make sure those notifications are turned on. Make sure you're subscribed because we will see you then.